go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hi there, I'm K-Town, and on this edition of Mysterious Radio. And we never talked about that. I never asked, like, I know you have this one being. Correct me if I'm wrong. Are you always communicating with one specific being, or have you communicated with different ones over the years?
And if you're talking about, like, extraterrestrial
yes,
types?
Yes,
yes. Yes, just the one, Anzar. And I've made some interesting discoveries about, well, things that I kind of knew but didn't know for sure. That I've kind of that we can, you know, talk about. But yes, that is the only one. I do communicate with other spirits, you know. I mean, that's just a normal thing all the time, whether I'm trying to or not. You know, sometimes it just kind of slips through, the signal line slips through. So
other spirits, but not, but only one specific extraterrestrial.
There is just one specific extraterrestrial. I've tried to contact others, and I think I have successfully, but or at least one other one, and it was a very short-lived thing, and then I went right back to Anzar because I, you know, when you got something that's working, why dilute it? You know, why try? You know, because everything is, it's difficult to make these connections. So I thought, why, you know, risk the what I got going on with Anzar by trying to branch out too much.
Too much. Okay. Now, let me ask you something about that, because, you know, we don't have any idea what's going on there as far as being able to connect with other beings. Is it because you said it was difficult to make the connection? Tell us why it's difficult. Why is it difficult to reach others and not him? Or is it a him? Is Anzar a...
As best I know, yeah.
Okay.
He is a him. And the reason it's difficult is for my, in my view, although, you know, I'm not exactly sure, but it takes a lot of effort for me and it takes a lot of effort for them. And once you get that connection, it's kind of like old fashioned radio and people used to dial it in, you know, they spent all this time dialing it in and you don't want to be messing around with the dial, you know. And because it can drift off, you know, so you want to keep it dialed in. And it is not easy because, like I said, it takes a lot of effort on both their part and my part. You have to be in the right frame of mind. You have to be in a setting that is where you're able to have focused calm. You know, that's the big thing. So and for me, that's walking meditation. And that's why I record everything, because I don't often remember everything unless I record it. You know, like what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing. And so all those conditions have to be right. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it works really well. I mean, just like we're talking right now. And other times it's more faint, you know, like if you're in a big house and you're telling somebody something from one end of the house to the other, it's like, what did you say? You know, that kind of thing. So that's how I would describe it. So, but every once in a while, that signal line gets really clear. Now, even with that, there's the other complication that makes it difficult, is that it's not always the kind of communication we're used to. You know, this is in the objective reality, the quantum nexus, as I call it. You know, so it is not a normal kind of communication. Oftentimes it's symbolic. Even if you do hear words or communication, it's often in kind of a, I don't know. It's kind of a weird language. It's not like a different language, just the way things are phrased, you know, and that can make it difficult because it could be misinterpreted. Like, you know, I speak three languages. I speak English and Norwegian and German. And my first language was Norwegian, but I'm fluent in Norwegian and English and German. I'm okay. But if someone's speaking too quickly, then I don't catch quite all of it. And if they use a term that I'm not familiar with, and I pause for a moment to try to ponder that, next thing you know, there's like five other words that I need to now remember, you know, so it you can have difficulty that way too, interpreting.
So they're choosing a language. It could be German or English, or
I hear it as English, but who knows what it really is, you know, because that's how it filters to me. You know, it could be like a, you know, whatever it is that makes me able to do this, there could be some kind of universal translator that that is helping, you know, the communication. But there can be things, you know, lost in the transmission, you know, both signal line quality and interpretation. As far as I understand, in my, you know, these several past years when I've been doing this, it just, you know, that's why, you know, people that are professional psychics, I really, my hat's off to them, the ones that do really well and that are honest and stuff. I mean, that is not easy. It's very tiresome. I'm not tiresome. It's tiring. You know, tiresome wouldn't be good. You don't want to be something that you don't like. But, you know, it is very tiring, and you're not always correct. So you have to deal with people that are disappointed, or it doesn't quite come through the way they want it to. And I feel like some of the people who aren't real honest about it will then use other means to try to make it sound more, you know, real or more true by, you know, picking up on people, you know, like doing some leading questions and things like that to kind of, you know, get information.
You're talking about people, other people who claim to have contact with. Gotcha.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and then there people are amazed and say, oh, how did you know my aunt Jenny died? And then, but then you had picked up on something, then you use that in addition to your psychic connection to Aunt Jenny or whatever. And you could do it seamlessly. And those that are really good can do it seamlessly. And then there are those that just are just purely using the psychic connection. But with that, it's not 100%. Even the, you know, like the professional, what do you call those guys? The remote viewers that the government had, you know, for a while there, Stargate or whatever, you know, none of them were 100%, but they were pretty accurate. And I don't know exactly what a good hit rate was, but it was really, really good. And enough for the CIA and the government in general to take them seriously. And I know for a fact that they're still doing it. I know they're doing it still, even though they claim they're not using that. Everybody's using it. Every major power, every minor power probably has a team of, you know, the highly trained remote viewers working constantly, trying to gain an advantage.
Yeah. Is that something you can do as well? I mean, can you remote view if you wanted to?
It's not really my specialty. And it's funny, I talked to Dr. Dean Radin, you know, from the, from IONS, the, Institute of Noetic Sciences, and I said, why is it that I can you know, I'm really good at, like, you know, telepathy and even telekinesis to a certain point and other things, and but remote viewing is a little bit more difficult. And he said, well, it's just like track and field, you know, just because you're a good javelin thrower doesn't mean you can do the 100-yard, you know, dash or 100 meters or whatever at world record pace, right? So, you know, I mean, there is good athletes are good athletes, but you're not going to be the best at every particular specialty, every sport or whatever. So that, I think it's kind of like that. And, but I get it. And I do, I have been successful with it, and I haven't practiced it as much as just the, you know, connecting to certain entities, whether it's Anzar or my friends in the spirit world, or, you know, that type of thing.
This is just something you did on your own to see if you could do it.
I was testing myself, and I'm trying to get this to stop doing that. It's some kind of, I don't know if you can hear it, but anyway, okay. So that's the best way to describe it. It's like, you know, you can't be, just because you're good at telepathy doesn't mean you're going to be good at remote viewing or, you know, other things in the paranormal realm or connecting to those in the quantum world that are what we would call extraterrestrials. Although Anzar likes to call himself and others our star brothers and sisters, it's kind of a nod to the Native American interpretation and also how the Aborigines look at it.
Is Anzar in the same realm as the people that die?
Yes, they operate in that same realm, as best I understand it. That's why I call it the quantum nexus. And the connection, well, actually the connection point between our world, our subjective world, and the interface, as I call it, and the objective world, which is the real objective reality. I call that the quantum nexus because we're connecting to the quantum world, which is, you know, in scientific terms, that's the world of quantum mechanics, you know, subatomic particles, which there is no past, present, and future. It's just all together at the same time, running together backwards and forwards and just almost beyond our comprehension, that kind of thing. And then there's a world beyond that, which is the what some people would call, religious people would call, the mind of God. Some people would call it the creator or you know, the one consciousness. I guess our friends in the East would say that. So there, and I think this David Bohm, the American physicist, who said there's the explicate order, which is our objective reality. That's you and I right now talking, doing what we do every day. That is the interface. It's really just an interface. We think it's reality, but the real reality is what we connect to when we do telepathy and or if I talk to Anzar, I talk to the, you know, my relatives who've passed on. That is the implicate order. That is the quantum realm. And then that's where the extraterrestrials are. That's where the spirits are. And then beyond that is the super implicate, which is the mind of God or the one consciousness, the creator of us all.
I had on one psychic medium that says, she says that she's not the only one, but there's another guy that kept having these out of body experiences. Mm-hmm. He lives in Germany. But he says, and she said that there's different, like, I keep wanting to say realms. I don't know what else mm-hmm. to call it.
Yeah.
When we die, they, depending on your frequency or whatever, you go to different ones. Mm-hmm. Then there's so many. I mean, or is that, tell me your experience with that, or do you believe that's true or what?
I think that could be true. You know, there's probably substrata, you know, within each realm or each reality. And I know I asked my friend Gene, who really kind of reawakened me to all this after he died in 2016, I asked him where all the really horrible people go. You know, because I said, are they there with you?
Yeah, where are they? That's what we need to know.
I said, do you have to hang around with Hitler? You know, that's basically what it always comes down to. You don't have to hang around with Hitler. That would be a real bummer. And he said, no, they're in a different, he was very funny. So he said, they're in a different zip code. So to me, that sounds like they're in a substrata there in the quantum world somewhere where they got to work out whatever they got to do.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's probably true, you know, but, you know, like all of this stuff, you know, we're poking around in the dark and we all have a couple puzzle pieces and we're like, look at what I got, you know, and okay, well, let me share with what you got. And then we put them together and there's still a million more pieces to go. Yeah.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to know, I mean, you've never talked to me about it. Maybe, I don't know. You've been on the show several times, but tell me what Anzar tells you about reincarnation or Gene even.
Yeah. That, you know, basically, I was just talking to my mother-in-law yesterday. It was Mother's Day, and we had her over, and we were talking about this concept. You know, I told her, I don't really think we ever die, you know, and I always like to quote Gene, you know, because I when I first saw Gene after he died, you know, I asked what a lot of people would probably ask, you know, what's it like to be dead? And he just laughed, and he said, if I was dead as you imagine it, how could I be talking to you? So it, that informs me that there is life beyond death or life beyond life, you know.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches, but there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
That death is a transition. So I don't think we really die. I think the best I described it to my mother-in-law was that it's like you come to a crossroads and there's different different paths, you know, in the infinite number of timelines, you know. So you might pass from one to the next and not even know it. I remember being a kid and saying to my friends, you know, how do we know we haven't already died and we're living somebody else's life, or we're living a different life than maybe we're, you know? And I remember,
my God,
I
was, that is a great question.
I was just a little kid. I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and I frightened my friends, and they didn't like it. You know, that plus the fact that I like to hang out at graveyards and try to talk to people, and they got spooked by that eventually. And I always felt comfortable though, because I, you know, I could hear things, and I didn't understand it necessarily, but I would ask these kind of questions, the questions that kids ask because they don't have a filter. You know, they you know, children, like my mom always said, you know, you'll get the truth from old people and children, you know, unless they've been had their hand in the cookie jar. That's the only time the kids might not tell the truth. But other than that, you know, they're just going to say it, tell you like it is. And old people do the same thing. You know, they don't have a filter either. So I think when kids, you know, we haven't been taught not to imagine that there is something beyond this world. And then it kind of gets not physically beaten out of you, but mentally beaten out of you as you go to school and are around in institutions where they tell you you can't talk about your invisible playmates or whatever. And I think that's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. And the same thing happened. You mentioned reincarnation. A lot of these young kids have these experiences and explain, you know, there's been so many cases where they've said, you know, I was a fighter pilot in World War II, and it's some little kid, you know, and they have all these details, things they couldn't possibly know. But then when they get older, they don't have that connection anymore. I think what happens is we convince them that it's not real, which is such a disservice to, you know, people. I mean, how many really gifted people do we lose, you know, that don't come back to it because they're discouraged from it? So they cut it off, they turn it off. And I was lucky in that my mom kept it going for me. She said, now don't tell people at school, but you can still tell me, you know, and we could, you know, do telepathy and we can talk about that stuff. But, you know, if people don't like it and, you know, like at school, then you probably shouldn't. You don't want to get in trouble. So I was taught that you have to kind of keep it hidden, which I did throughout the military, throughout working in the defense industry, and most of my career teaching at the university. I didn't want to lose my career. So it was quite a leap when Gene convinced me in 2016 that it was time to start telling the whole story, you know, everything that's happened to me. And it was a big risk. And, you know, not that I want people to, you know, think that I'm some kind of hero, because I'm not. I'm just telling what has happened to me. And of course, you know, as you know, that some people don't react well to that. Other people are open-minded, you know, and some people have had experiences, so they really, you know, they really dig it, but, and they get it. But,
I'm sorry for interrupting you.
No, this
just dawned on me. This is the reason why I asked you this question, because as many psychic mediums as I interview, I try to find out whether or not they've actually ever went to make a connection for a loved one and didn't because they've already reincarnated. I mean, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. I don't know for sure. Everybody who I've in my family, pretty much everybody I've connected to that I've wanted to connect to, there are some that I haven't. And that maybe that's an explanation why it doesn't always work. Like when people ask me to connect to their loved ones, I don't do it for money. I just do it for, you know, friends or whatever and colleagues. And sometimes I make the connection, other times not. But usually I do that when it's fairly soon after, in our timeline anyway, fairly soon after they passed.
How soon?
Like I've had people ask me like within a week after somebody has passed away, and you hear some psychic mediums say, oh, no, that's too soon. You know, they're still, you know, they're not aware that they're dead, you know, and I've encountered that in connecting to them, that they're not quite aware. And then there's people who specialize in helping people cross, you know, to cross over, or to realize that they've moved on to a different existence. And actually, I've asked Gene to help people, because he's very good at that. He was a very kind person in life and in this life, and he's a very kind person in the next one. And he's helped several of my colleagues, friends, and relatives, you know, accept it and accept their new role.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting right there. Okay. So they've passed on, mm-hmm. but they don't realize it. See, the reason why I'm trying yeah. to get some idea. So do they see things like, are they still seeing in our reality? Is that why it's so confusing for them? Or
if you're in a half dream state and you're not quite sure, am I awake or am I dreaming? I think it's kind of, that's what I understand it to be like that. You know, that they're not quite sure. Wait a second. Is this a dream? Am I dreaming that I've passed on, or am I, you know, is it real? You know, I think that it's that confuses them. And oftentimes I think some people really do get stuck for quite a while. And other people probably, I think, transition very quickly. Maybe they're more ready for it. I think it might have to do with the person, but it also might have to do by how the transition happened, whether it was sudden, like an accident or something, and then they just don't accept it. And I don't know for sure. It's a really good question. That's just been the variety of different things I've encountered with these spirits, and it's always been fascinating to me how. You know, how this happens, how, you know, like I said, since I was a little kid. And the more I've really gotten into it seriously since Gene told me to in 2016, the more I've been able to manage it and understand it better. Because before it just happened randomly because I didn't know how to turn it on or turn it off. And I always mention that when I get interviewed, you have to be able to, it's more important to learn how to turn it off, this connection, because you can't have all these people trying to contact you
all the
or
time.
Entities. Yeah, yeah. Especially the bad ones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I know we're not talking about the bad stuff, but there's bad stuff out there too. Just like in this existence, you know, there are some terrible individuals, you know, and I used to work in prisons, so I've guarded many of them. And I mean, I always try to see the spark of life in somebody, but I'm telling you, when I guarded, especially this one mass murderer in a maximum security prison in Minnesota, I looked in his eyes and I didn't see anything. It was like looking into a deep well, you know, the bottomless well. That's what it looked like. And I knew that there, you know, some people would say, well, that he's probably possessed or something. And that could very well be. Or it could be just somebody who has a genetic defect where they have no ability to sympathize or empathize with anybody. And maybe it's not even their fault, you know. You know, who knows? But for our safety, those people have to be put away. I mean, it's. I wish nobody had to be put away in jail. It's a horrible existence for the prisoners, but also for the guards. It's a horrible. It's really horrible. You know, there's some people that just they have to be, you know, kept away from the general population. But I'm not sure how I got into that. It's always coming back to the prison experiences.
No, you're good. And I was wanting to ask you, and we're going to talk about mm-hmm. more bad spirits in just a second, but before I lose my train of thought, when you're communicating, Bruce, with these other spirits that seem to be a little confused as to what's happened to them, are they actually telling you that? Are they saying, am I dead, or what's going on? What are they saying to you when you're communicating with them? And you have to bring Gene in to cross them over.
Yeah, it's not always that clear. Oftentimes they don't trust me. They go, you know, who in the heck are you? You know, what are you doing? Why are you here? So I have to, like, first, before I even get into that, I have to say, okay, you know, my name's Bruce, and I've had this connection ability since I was a little kid. I didn't really ask for it. It's just something that I have. I try to help as much as I can. And if I know, you know, their relative or whatever, I'll say, and this, your relative asked me to do this. And I kind of help them, you know, accept me for who I, because you know, it's like you meet a stranger and they're all of a sudden up in your business. You don't know what is their intention. What are they doing? Why do they know this stuff? You know, so they're naturally suspicious. And then they, okay, all right, I get it. And okay, what now? And then I say, well, I have a good friend who is very good at helping people cross over. you know, to accept what has happened to you. And then they usually, I've never had one not comply with that. You know, they've all pretty much said, okay, I'll give it a shot. And so, but the first reaction is just like we would in this reality, you know, if you encounter somebody who all of a sudden knows everything about you, but you don't know who they are or what they're up to, then you're going to be naturally suspicious. And it's, I think, the same for them after they've passed from this world. So others, like I said, are more prepared. They've done the work. Maybe they've had a lot of experiences, you know, like myself, you know, it's not that I'm not afraid. I think everybody's afraid of dying, but you just don't want to have a horrible, painful death. But even so, you know, it's going to happen to all of us. We're going to pass to this other reality, other dimension, other realm, as you like to say. But I've prepared for it. So I know who's on the other side. I know who's there, and I've encountered them, and you know, it's like moving somewhere, but you already have friends who live there.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you something about UFOs, and I don't think we've gotten into this, but have you had a UFO experience? I mean, you talked to Anzar, so I mean, tell me about some of your experiences.
Yeah, in fact, I had one with my son probably in 2018. I went outside to do something. It was night and it was a nice starry sky, and I saw something, and I go, that looks very unusual. The way it was moving, and it was very bright, and it was moving erratically. It wasn't a satellite. It wasn't an airplane. And so I went and got my son, and I said, what do you think of this? And he goes, oh, maybe it's an airplane. And he looked at it and he goes, no, an airplane wouldn't move like that. And why is it pulsating? And why are there little lights coming out of it, you know, like shooting out of it? So we saw that together, which was really cool to be able to witness that together. Now, who it was or whatever, I mean, I asked Anzar, and he said it wasn't him. So, but he said there's, you know, it could have been, I mean, he's not all knowing, he's not omniscient, so he doesn't know exactly who it was, but he said it was extraterrestrial, but, you know, he didn't know exactly what they were doing. But said that that's what it was. It wasn't an Earth vehicle or whatever, which I kind of figured out anyway, but it's always nice to ask him to confirm. And when my first experience when I was a kid, when I first met Anzar, I didn't know him as Anzar then. I just knew him as a protector, that, you know, this monster that I thought was a monster, but he wasn't, actually protected me. And he was able to show me not nuts and bolts, like right in front of me, reality in our reality, but like in a holographic image, what a ship looks like, what a UFO looks like. And I was fascinated by that. And I've also had a lucid dream or vision, as I call them, of flying in an extraterrestrial craft. And it had no control surfaces. It was circular in shape. There were other people there. There was a military person there. And it was really curious because he had this little box that he put in a hole in the middle of this round craft that we were in. And he plunged this thing. I thought it was like a graphite rod or something, like they have as dampeners in a, you know, in a nuclear facility or whatever, that kind of, that's what it looked like. He put it in there. And when he did that, the craft itself disappeared. It was a totally translucent, you know, the outer part of you could see like 360 degrees all around you. And as soon as he put that thing in, it just, that happened. And he looked at me and he smiled and he said, it's alive. and I thought, wow, that's a good description. It's kind of like the movie Frankenstein, you know, when he creates the monster, you know, and it's alive. And then we were able to move around and nobody knew it was us, what we were doing, you know, flying. And we were on a military base and we were flying by people and they had no idea we were there at incredible speeds or really slow or hovering or whatever. And no sound, with 360 degree view everywhere. And so that's what I asked Anzar about that. And he said that he had, you know, he wanted to show me what these craft can do. So then I realized this is, none of these things that these people are encountering are, you know, Earth vehicles, you know, these UAPs, as the military likes to call them. They're not Earth vehicles. These are extraterrestrial craft, and they can appear as whatever they want to appear as. So they can be invisible. They can be visible. They can look like some classic sci-fi saucer. They can look like, what, you know, a triangle. They can look like whatever you want it to look like, or whatever you might perceive it as, you know, whatever your frame of reference is. So, yes, I've had those experiences.
So you said extraterrestrial craft. Do you believe, I mean, are they traveling? Do you think they're traveling from other planets, or are they interdimensional somehow? Just
No, they're interdimensional. So that's, you know, they don't always need, well, I don't know exactly at what point they need to use a craft. I think that, you know, just like the ghosts that we see, or that I've seen and that other people have seen, they can move through walls. They can move through solid objects because that they're not in, you know, that they're not in this interface that we're in. So they don't, the same laws don't apply. The law of physics don't apply. And they, so they can travel great distances. And I, you know, the way it was described to me, Ansar showed me a crumpled up piece of paper. And then he said, okay, now what happens when you unwrap the paper? And then he had, somehow there were these dots on one, you know, one corner of the paper, another corner of the paper, like diagonal, you know, one on each corner of the paper. And then he crumpled, and then you saw it, you know, there was, okay, there's a certain distance between those two points. And then if you crumple up the paper, what happens? The dots are right on top of each other. And he said, that's my explanation for how this travel works.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This interdimensional travel, that it's right there, all of it together. We are there and we are here at the same time in that realm. You know, that there's no distance too great.
Yeah.
And it makes sense.
Almost like they can travel instantaneously to places.
Yes. Yeah. Just like my mom and my brother, when my brother was in Vietnam, I think I maybe told you this before, but my mom knew instantly when my brother was in trouble in Vietnam, when he thought he was going to die. He was under rocket attack and in Pleiku, I think it was where he was. And, we confirmed it later when we got him on the phone. And, you know, well, my dad and I saw my mom get up in the middle of the night screaming and crying. And she said, my brother's name is Alf. She says, Alf is crying. He's in trouble in Vietnam. We knew he's in Vietnam. He's in trouble. He's in serious trouble. And we couldn't calm my mom down. She said, I can hear him. I can hear him crying. And then I think it was a couple weeks later, we got him on the phone. And we just said, out of curiosity, you know, what happened on this date? And then he was reluctant to tell us, you know, because a lot of, you know, both of us have been in the military. You don't always like to tell your parents or loved ones exactly what goes on because you don't want to traumatize them. But he did confess that he thought he was going to die at that exact moment. And that was in Vietnam and we were in Seattle. So there's no, it doesn't matter the distance because the paper's crumpled, everything's together. In that realm.
So your mom was, I mean, she was alive then, right?
Yeah, she was alive.
So
yeah. Probably 1970.
Well, I mean, what happened at that moment? Did she experience some type of bilocation or?
She saw my brother and heard his voice. She saw like an image of him in trouble, and she knew he was in Vietnam. Obviously, we all did, but she could hear him crying and hear him. Upset and afraid for his life, which is what was going on. And we all know those, you know, us, like us have been in the military. We know that that's one of the last things people do in the military when they're in combat and they think they're going to die. They all, you know, they call out for their mothers. So
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is just really wild. And let's talk about your mother's abilities for a moment.
Yeah.
Did she tell you about ghosts and stuff? I mean, did y'all have, you know, paranormal activity in your home growing up or anything like that?
Yeah, I think it was just considered so normal. You know, our ability, what I really remember, and I think I shared this, was my mom and I would connect using playing cards and read each other's thoughts, you know, and pass information telepathically. but ghosts were a very common thing. It wasn't unusual for this to be happening. And one particular thing I remember was a funeral of an old Norwegian man that was a family friend. And at the funeral, he was there in a coffin. It was open casket. It was the first time I'd ever been to an open casket funeral, which is pretty, you know, it's really something for a young person to see that, especially somebody you know. And that was somebody that was close to the family. And I heard him speaking to me, telling me not to worry, don't be scared, he's okay. And I looked at my mom and she looked at me and she just winked. But my dad was kind of between us, so we couldn't really talk about it. But I knew that she knew that I heard him and she heard him too. So we had those kind of moments. We always had to be careful with my dad because he didn't like that. That was the only thing that frightened him, was that kind of stuff. He was, he was a fisherman in Alaska. He was in a camp, labor camp in World War II, a Nazi labor camp. He was pretty fearless, but that would frighten him. That would seriously frighten him. And everybody has something that really frightens them. And that was it for him. And for me and my mom, it was not, it's not that I don't get frightened by those, especially demonic kind of things. It can be pretty unnerving. I just avoid it. That's my mechanism. Somebody tells me, I think there's a demonic presence in there, and I'll go, okay, fine, I believe you. I'm not going in there. There's no way. I've accidentally stumbled into that stuff, and that's bad enough. So, and survived to tell the tale.
Yeah. I think you told me about that.
So I think it was normal for me and my mom. It was just not considered unusual. And I just lived my life that way. I had all these experiences and just collected them and wrote about them and kept it kind of hidden, except for a few trusted friends. I might say something here and there, but for the most part, you don't always get a good reaction, when people, they say, that's a bunch of hogwash, or whatever. But and then especially when you get into professional situations, and the military and you get security clearances and you work for a defense contractor, you work for a college and you don't want to, jeopardize your career. You don't, go around saying that you talk to dead people. So you wouldn't pass the job interview if you said stuff like that. Even the VA, when I went to get my benefits, my medical benefits, they do a psych questionnaire, and there was a box on there that said, do you hear people's voices that aren't there? Do you see people that aren't there? And I looked at the lady and I said, I'm not going to check your box here, but yes, I do, because I'm very psychic and I have been my whole life, but I'm not going to check your box because I know what happens next once you check those boxes. So. Because that's what people do. They say, oh, really? You hear voices? Well, that's okay. Schizophrenia. Okay. Yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
And I asked a psychiatrist once, I said, is it possible that people that you've classified as schizophrenic, they're on medication, that are in an institution, could they just be extremely psychic and they don't know how to deal with it?
Me too. I thought that too. I thought, how do we know their third eye isn't just wide open?
Yeah. Exactly. They don't know how to turn it off. That's why I always tell people, you got to learn how to turn it off. That's the most important thing. And he just looked at me and he said, that is a very frightening thought. He was so, what do you call it? Left-brained or whatever, that, I've gone to medical school. I know all the answers. I've got great confidence. I'm the doctor, and then I just kind of blew his mind. And he didn't, he did want a copy of my book, of my experiences, which was interesting. So I think he was somewhat open to it, but he just professionally couldn't grasp it, because then what do you do with these poor people?
Right.
You got to look at them in a very different way.
Man, that is really frightening. That is frightening, actually.
Yeah.
And so sad. Yeah. You just hope that isn't the case. But yeah, I do believe it could probably be the case, because I do remember seeing a show that I think Oprah Winfrey had this guy on. I wish I could find it. Something happened to him one night. He was laying in his bed and for some reason his third eye opened up and he saw his best friend, like a premonition of his best friend, in a motorcycle crash, and it really happened. And they followed him around. It was a documentary and he started seeing all these aliens everywhere. He was being studied by all these people and he would just see them in broad daylight,
Yeah.
And he would be scared to death. But one of he started talking to these beings, someone would seriously think his guy was schizophrenic, and he's not. So
and start medicating.
Yeah, start medicating him.
And then that's a down. And once they accept it, you know, and you say, "Oh, I guess I am nuts," then you know, there's a certain point where it's probably going to be very difficult to reach back to the subjective reality, the interface again. That's why I always say you got to learn how to turn it off. More important than turning it on, you know, people say, "Oh, I want to be psychic." Oh, really? You really want to be psychic? Maybe you don't. You know, be careful what you wish for, you know, because there's downside to it too. You know, you got to question yourself all the time. You got to be able to turn it off, and you got to be able to use it for good, because there are people that can do it and they don't care about turning it off. They just want to do, you know, bad things, you know, like greedy things, like get exactly what I want when I want it. And that's, you know, kind of human nature, right? And they have these incredible abilities, and then they use them for not good. And eventually, it, you know, you have to pay the piper either in this world or the next. But they, you know, they don't have the discipline to just say, you know, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to hurt other people. I'm not going to take stuff from people. I'm not going to manipulate people. But we all know people who do have abilities who, well, people don't always think it's psychic, but they think, oh, they're just very manipulative. Well, maybe they're very psychic too, and they can use that. Like, if I walk into a room, I can't read people's minds, but I can read their intentions, and that is not good. So I have to turn it off. I don't want to know what they're intending to do unless it's something very, very dangerous. And I usually don't walk into those situations, except when I was in the prison. Then I always had that. I had to know that. You have to have literally eyes in the back of your head. And, you know, the prisoners and the guards both have to. You know, you live in this world where it's anything could happen at any time. And anyway, that's kind of my understanding of it.
Have you ever seen, you know, what entity or ghost or whatever out somewhere, and you're the only one that saw her and no one else saw her or whatever?
I've
looked totally real.
I've seen ghosts, apparitional, you know, apparitions or ghosts. I've seen it with actually my first wife. We saw her grandmother together, her grandmother who had died many decades before. And it was in Austria. And she was, I'm not going to say like solid flesh and blood. Like if we were to meet, you know, and see each other in person, it was more of a, I like to say holographic image. You know, it's like you can tell it's kind of a little bit ethereal, but you can make out details of the face and the body, and there's shadow. You know, there's not like just a shadow. You know, you can see details. And I've had that happen in New Hampshire too. And you know, that one didn't speak. Well, neither of the grandmother of my ex-wife or the lady that I encountered in New Hampshire, neither one of them spoke. So they could have been, you know, what do you call it? It's kind of like a tape loop that keeps playing. This person is just, their energy is just there. And it's not an intelligent energy. It's just kind of a residual, like an echo effect or whatever, that can last, I guess, quite a while. I'm not sure exactly how long they'll last, but I've encountered that. And with Anzar, most of the time I don't see him, but I have caught glimpses of him, and it's always just a faint image. It's not, you know, like sitting down and talking to somebody in this world or whatever. So I, you know, and that's one of the things that Linda Moulton Howe asked me, you know, have you ever seen him in person, just right there next to you? And I said, no, it's always been more of a holographic image or a suggestion of him, or just his voice. Or even text sometime. It's kind of a weird thing. I'll see words too, or images. Or sometimes he likes to play like a tape reel for me, like a newsreel or something, you know, to try to explain something. So I think it's just they try everything they can to get their message across.
They're taking images that are already in your head, or are they?
Mm-hmm. Okay, sometimes. Got you. Mm-hmm. And using that, like making, you know, it's like this whole artificial intelligence thing, which I think is very, is a step. You know, I know a lot of people are afraid of it. And I mean, I'm included. I mean, I run into this already. It teaching college. You know, I get AI generated papers already, and I can kind of tell now just by, because every writer has a voice, just like we have a speaking voice, they have a written voice. I've read so many papers and done so much writing myself. I can see when something doesn't seem right, but it's getting better and better. And it's going to be pretty soon. It'll be probably not long, probably a matter of months. Things are accelerating so quickly. I won't be able to tell at all if it's artificial intelligence, that AI that is written.
I think it's awful.
It's terrible for the young people, because once you get that crutch, once you get that, you know, it's like getting hooked on drugs, you know. The first high, I guess, is pretty good. And then after that, you're just chasing that and you're not really learning anything. And hopefully you're not going to be some kind of life or death situation and have no knowledge or skill, you know, for what's going on. Everything's fake, you know.
That's right. That's right. You're handing over your brain to a computer. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. Absolutely crazy.
It kind of helps us understand the quantum realm as well. You know, in a way, it kind of preparing us for that, the discipline that it's going to take. And if we can't handle our rudimentary AI, how are we going to handle having full up telepathy and telekinesis? You know?
Well, let me ask you, that's a good question. Okay, you bring me to a good point, because I just had I don't know what I saw. Maybe I talked to somebody, I can't remember, but they said that, no, this was an audiobook. Mm-hmm. The being that assisted in the writing of this audiobook said that they had a very serious concern about the human mm-hmm. race developing technology that's far beyond their spiritual growth, and that things could really happen as far as it can be catastrophic, and we could, you know, lose our tempers when things happen. Yeah. And we have all these nuclear weapons, and they're very frightened that we are going to blow ourselves up.
Yeah.
And supposedly that's happened like six other times already.
I would echo that. You know, I think that we have to make an evolutionary leap, and we have to realize that all these squabbles that we're having are, a lot of them are artificially generated. You know, a lot of things can be solved if people just talk to each other and empathize with each other. Or as my mom,
When you say artificially generated, you mean on purpose?
Yes. People with bad intentions are doing it on purpose to divide, so they can use it to, you know, the old divide and conquer thing. They manipulate people. They know what it takes. And it's very simple. You know, the secret, I always teach my students this, and then I say, just be aware of it. Don't use it for evil. But the secret to propaganda is to take some very complex issue and boil it down to a very simple slogan, and then repeat it constantly, and people are likely to accept it. And then the purpose of propaganda is to get people to believe something and then take action based on that belief. And the exactly. best way to manipulate people is by getting them afraid or angry. And if you can keep them in a constant state of fear or anger, that's their reptilian brain. That's not the smart us. That's the instinctual us, which we need in a survival situation, but in order to, you know, like to run or to fight. But in everyday world, you know, we need to use our frontal lobes. You know, we need to think and feel for one another and help each other and, you know, that type of thing. And that takes that away. So people operate just on that very basic realm of fight or flight constantly. It's like I was talking to my students about it, and I said it's like we're in a constant state of road rage. You know, none of us,
exactly.
You know, we've all had road rage. We're not proud of it. I'm not proud of it. I don't know anybody's proud of having road rage, but luckily it just passes real quick, right? Usually. Some people take.
Not in Miami, it doesn't. It's constantly in Miami. I'm serious. Everybody blows their horn down there constantly.
You know, I'm just talking about the United States, but I think we could say for the world too, but let's just focus on the U.S. I think we have a national case of road rage, and it's being exacerbated by irresponsible people in positions of power. Let's just say it that way. I'm not pointing to any particular group or party. You know, the media does it as well. All over the place, corporate entities use that because they know that's how you get, you know, you get people to take action based on their belief, and you can manipulate them to do whatever you want them to do.
And pushed and amplified by social media.
And I myself, you know, I'd say, oh, well, you know, I communicate with spirits, and I, you know, I always have this mantra, you know, keep love in my heart, and I always operate from a position of love. That's easy said, not always easy to apply. So many times a day, I have to remind myself, I got to keep love in my heart. I got to operate from a position of love. I got to keep love in my heart. I got to operate from a position of love. You know, it's kind of like that Seinfeld episode where the Mr. Costanza is going, serenity now, you know, it's like yelling or screaming it. But I have to, you know, I have to say that constantly. It works. It does work because it helps you from making these emotional decisions prompted by other people's rhetoric, you know. And when you really focus on what's important, and then you make those connections, and you realize what's true and what's good. And that's, it's very difficult to do. It is, because people have different experiences, and those differences get emphasized and amplified, and then we forget that all the commonality. And that's the basic rule in conflict resolution, is to share your common suffering, that we all are suffering in one way or another, some more than others, definitely some more than others, but everybody is going to suffer. And from that suffering, you're supposed to gain understanding. And then you find the common suffering, and then you discover love from that.
Exactly. Very well said. I wanted to ask you about the video you sent me. Tell me about that. Because, I mean, that you were speaking a language that I don't know what it was.
I don't know either. I'm telling you, I do these spirit walks, you know, that we've talked about, where I go out there and just, you know, open myself up after I protect myself, right? And I open it up, and I asked Anzar, you can tell at the beginning of that video, I said, you know, Anzar, could you speak in your native language, whatever that is? He told me he's from the Orion system. So, you know, the constellation of Orion. And then there's Rigel, which is, if you look at the constellation of Orion on the far right, like where his far his foot is, as you look at the constellation of Orion, that's Rigel. And that's the system. I think it's a trinary system. Triplanetary system. He said that's where he's originally from. But I said, in your native language, tell me something, speak to me. And all of a sudden I was saying, it's like, I felt really weird. I felt like, wait a second, something just caused me to say this. I am saying it, but it's not coming from me. And it even sounds weird. It doesn't, not only does the language, the sound of it sound weird, but my voice sounds kind of weird too. I don't usually talk like that. And then it was over, and I said, that was weird. What did that mean? Because I had no idea what it meant. And then I can't even remember what I think I wrote in there, what he said, something about from your
listen to your heart.
Yeah, listen to your heart, and the wind will flow through you. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that means, but it sounds pretty cool. You know, that I'm trying to figure it out. He doesn't always make everything very clear, you know, like explain every detail. Kind of like when Gene told.
Yeah, but how did you know it said listen to your heart and the wind will fall? Did he tell you that afterwards?
He told me afterwards what it meant. And then it made sense to me. It goes, yeah, it kind of sounds like that when you listen to it again. I've only listened to it a few times, but because it just happened this morning. But I'm going to listen to it more, and then I'm going to do some kind of AI. This is how I deal with AI. I use AI. You know, the students use it. So you guess what? I'm going to use it too. So I'm going to ask it all kinds of questions, and I'm going to use it to my advantage. I even know professors who grade using AI. They'll put a student's paper in there and they grade this, and it'll do it. So
how are you going to use it?
I'm just going to use it for, you know, certain questions. And, you know, in this case, I'm going to see if there's an audio component where I can play that and they can identify language roots or something. And it'll be very interesting.
It'd be cool.
It doesn't sound like any language I've ever heard. And there's some kind of weird, you know, like in sub-Saharan Africa, my master's degree in history, I specialize in sub-Saharan Africa. And there's, I think it's the Zulu that have that kind of sound, you know, in their language.
Yeah.
It's like an inward, you suck inwards and click your tongue. And it's really weird to listen to. It's cool when you hear it done naturally, you know, like in the middle of a sentence, you know, they're saying it. And it's almost like I heard something like that in there, too. And it's, how could I do that? I don't know anything like that.
It sounded also sounded like it had Native American type.
Yes, it did. And a little bit of Spanish. I thought I heard Spanish in there, too. And so, you know, whatever the proto language is, you know, whatever started this whole thing, you know, and then mutated into all our different languages that we have, it could be something like that. It'll be interesting to have it analyzed. And I'm going to do that. And I will share with you what I find out.
Yeah, please. Because I mean, I thought it was Native American when I first heard it. I said, well, I hear bits of it, maybe, you know, I don't know, but it would be interesting to know that. That was really neat. Thank you for sending that to me.
Yeah, I thought,
because I could tell you had no idea what you just said. You don't know.
No, I did. I was like, it was like it took over from me. I know you hear about these channel, you know, I don't consider myself a channeler. I just consider myself like a, you know, I guess a psychic medium or whatever. I don't know what else to say. A connector, you know, a conduit, you know, for this. And, but I felt like something kind of took, I mean, I physically felt different afterwards. I go, that's why I said that was, not only did it sound weird, but that was weird what I felt in my body. It's like the core of my body felt different. You know how, like when you have butterflies in your stomach, you know, that, a little bit like that. And I go, wow, that was really strange. And anyway, so that, yeah, I wanted to share that with you because this can be quite an adventure.
Absolutely. I'm willing to tell you that. I mean, conduit's a good word for that. But don't you think that, I mean, in order for him to come through and speak through you and you not remember it, your consciousness has to be suppressed in some type of way?
Yeah, it's just, well, I have, you know, 1 foot in that quantum world and 1 foot out. So I can come back. You know, that's very important. That's what my wife always says. She said, that's fine, but you got to come back. I
said, okay. going over there and staying. Yeah.
I'm not going to go cuckoo. No, I'm coming back. So, but anyway, so I don't know how else to describe it other than it felt like butterflies in my stomach and something was inside of me. It came from inside of me. Not like I came out of my mouth. Obviously, I was saying something, but it's like it rose up from, I don't know all the Eastern terms like chakras or whatever, but it kind of came from that, you know, that the belly inside of me area, you know, like the where your belly button is. Wow. I don't even know what that's called. I don't know the terminology, but that's, it kind of rose up from there and out of my mouth.
Yeah. I mean, it's not your root chakra. Yeah. It's up above your root chakra. I don't know what that is either. I would be interested, Bruce, to know if at that moment, if you let off some type of like light outside your body, because I witnessed a lady and she passed away not too long ago. I hated that. I should have interviewed her, but I went to her home and I saw her channel a spirit. Mm-hmm. And the whole entire living room filled with light. And the only way I could, this is like 12 or 13 people in there. The only way I could see anyone is to turn my head and then I could see him. And I thought I was seeing something, you know, experiencing some type of sickness or maybe I'm nervous, until I talked to Kim when we left. And I told her, I said, listen, I mean, maybe it was just me. I said, but I couldn't see anyone but Pat when she started channeling. She said, I couldn't see anybody either. She's the only one I could see, and the whole room was filled with white light. So I'm wondering if that happened to you, even though you were outside and stuff. Like, I'm wondering if that happened to you.
She opened up a portal, and you guys were along for the ride. So you were actually in another dimension with her, more than likely. That's what I would suspect. So you didn't necessarily see the other folks there. But next time I'll turn the camera around on me. I know I had it turned, you know, towards what I was seeing. But it would be interesting to see if there's any physical changes or light or anything else next time I do that. It just kind of surprised me. I didn't know what was going to happen. I just thought, oh, maybe you can say something. You know, I didn't really plan it.
Because you ask him, it doesn't mean he's going to do it, right? I mean, you said,
it doesn't mean he's going to do it.
Okay, got you.
Yeah, he can, you know, he can be a little, I'm not going to say tricky, but he, you know, I had one lady say, it's kind of like sometimes it sounds like Ansar is not mean, but she said kind of strict in a way. You know, it's like those people that love you, but they're very strict.
Yeah.
It's like the tough love, which I try to do as a parent. It's tough to be a tough love kind of parent, but, you know, you have to do it. And sometimes And I think that's kind of a good way to describe it. You know, he doesn't always comply, you know, and there's got to be a reason for it. Maybe I'm not ready, it, you know, whatever. No, it's a very, very good relationship. And it's a strange journey that I'm really enjoying, and I'm enjoying sharing it with you. So
that is awesome. Are you planning on writing any more books, you know, in your journey with Anzar or any?
Yeah, I've got a couple things. I'm still doing the comic books, which are also based on my experiences, and I can kind of go off in different directions and really let my imagination go. So, you know, fiction is often truer than nonfiction sometimes, and it often is. And then I just contacted, just out of the blue, I don't know if you know the case of the USS Nimitz, you know, yeah. And the mm-hmm. Nimitz fighter or carrier group. There were those sailors on board who witnessed what was going on, including the pilots, but also the radar operators. They witnessed, UFOs and activity, you know, a lot of it off the coast of California there. And anyway, I just contacted one of those guys, Kevin Day, who is, I'd actually met him before at one of these UFO things, I think in Nevada. And I just said, you know, I just felt compelled to contact you. And he said, well, you know, we're putting together this task force of people that are going to investigate, UAPs, and we're going to get on a ship, and we're going to go out into the ocean, and we're going to go to the same spot, and we're going to try to make the connection. And so he wants me to be part of it. And I just,
really?
Okay, that's what's supposed to happen. You know, he's got an organization that he has put together, and I, yeah, he sent me an email that had, I'm not going to share who they were because that's maybe they want it to be private, but if it was just you and me, I'd tell you, but these people that everybody knows that are on this list, you know, and I'm talking about really well-known people. And now I have their emails, and I thought, oh, I better be careful with that. Yeah, I'm sure they don't want everybody to have their email. So, I'll just tell you this, that there's a lot more people actively engaged in this and not letting on that they are. And I understand, especially if they're in government and stuff, you know, or high up in different agencies, that they don't want it to be known necessarily what they're up to or what they believe or don't believe.
That is interesting. So, there, I'd be interested in finding out, you know, what comes of that.
Yeah, well, I'll share with you as I learn more, and you know, the stuff that you know they want to share at this point. But you know, I'm not trying to be cryptic or anything. I just don't know what the parameters are right now. So because it just happened today, just like the Anzar communication just happened today. So I need time to kind of put it together and see what's going on.
And Bruce, why don't you just tell my listeners where they can find out more about you or keep up with anything else you're working on or get your comic books?
Yeah, I have a website, just my first name, Bruce, middle name, Olav, that's spelled O-L-A-V, last name, Solheim, S-O-L-H-E-I-M, as in Michael. BruceOlavSolheim.com. And you can see all my books that I've written, paranormal books, my comic books, my other, you know, all my academic books from my academic life. And a bio is on there and a bunch of other links. I think even some music is on there because I'm a musician too. So I love to play music and write music. And that's where they can get a hold of me. All the books are available on Amazon, all the comic books too. Available on Amazon, the paranormal books, the comic books, everything. So you can just look up my name, and there's not too many Bruce Solheims. So there's only two in the United States. One, the other guy lives in Minnesota, and he's a marathon runner.
Really?
Yeah. So there's only two of us.
That's awesome. Kinda cool. That is awesome. I've really enjoyed this. I love talking to you. One of my favorite guests, Bruce Olav.
I love talking to you too.
Yeah, and let me say this before I go. When is that supposed to happen? Can you tell us that? When that's supposed to happen with Kevin Day? Or
from what I understand, it'll be in a couple of years.
A couple of years. Okay.
Yeah.
And
it's not immediate.
Everybody. No. So they're meeting on your side of the country, somewhere in California, down there.
That's what I understand. I don't have all the details, but that's what I understand. And I told him, well, yes, I want to be involved with it. And next thing I know, he is making an announcement on Facebook.
That's cool. Really cool. That is cool. I really love talking to you. One of my favorite guests, Bruce Olav Solheim, my special guest. Bruce, many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time.
You too.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.